a learning process.
Very much.
Constantly learning, constantly adjusting.
Yep.
Oh, man. So, where are we?
We are in...
Carlsbad.
Carlsbad, California. California.
Yeah. Right outside of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Cool trip. Easy show.
Yeah, it's been nice. I haven't had one of these in a while.
We're not going to jinx ourselves, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because no, we still got... Man, we still have today and tomorrow. I know. I did it. I ruined it. Oh, man. But, you know, this is one of those shows where, you know, we come in, we're traveling with good people, people mm-hmm. we like hanging out with.
Yep.
Beautiful resort.
Yeah, it is. It's gorgeous, you know, up here.
We have one of these days where we're sitting out halfway through the show, halfway through today's day, and they're mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, long break.
Yeah, yeah.
So we finally took this opportunity to record something.
Yeah, exactly.
Which we've been talking about for
4 months, 6 months,
at least.
Like that. Yeah,
at least
like that, yeah.
since early on. Yeah. You know, we're here with. I'm sorry, didn't even introduce you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We should start there.
Yeah, Robert Perminer. Robert cool. Captain Jack Perminer. Big Perm. I've got so many nicknames for you.
You do every time. It's something different. It's hilarious.
But you know what? That means that's because I like you.
Yeah. You're usually it's a sign of endearment.
Right.
When you
right.
have
and you've no, you've nicknames. Always just kind of like you just go with it.
Oh, yeah, it is what it is. As long as they're not insulting.
No.
And then,
no.
Then sometimes it's even funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Banana Gate.
Oh boy.
Oh, side note. But anyways, so how did you find the industry?
How did I find the industry? Well, when I was a teenager, probably like, you know, we're talking 14, 15, I started playing around with audio mixers. My church at the time mm-hmm. Was getting rid of their mixer, and they bought this, I think they bought a Mackie, one of the old Mackie 16 channels, like one of the first generations of those. And they had this old Tapco mixer that was giant. It was the size of like a keyboard. And they asked me if I wanted it, and I was like, yeah, sure. So I took that thing home, and at the time... some of my friends and stuff had video cameras, and we would shoot little movies ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And we got into like doing in-camera editing. So we would do a take and then time the out point of that take for the next take and then change camera angles and just doing like three or four different shots and then just doing all the editing within camera. So
yeah.
Doing that was just blew our minds. And then what we did is we started then... making it, started doing A/B editing. So we would take the camera and then I would do, dub it to VHS, mm-hmm. make the edits manually on a VHS tape. And then, I would use that mixer to then do a third generation, or I guess that would be a second generation.
Yeah,
copy.
Right.
Second
yeah,
generation yep, copy yep, of yep. that VHS edit and add in all the sound effects and music
right.
and stuff.
Cause this is before digital.
Oh, this is so, just before all that came to fruition. Yeah.
So anything you do, mm-hmm. you're losing generation, you're losing
generation
quality.
Loss and quality. And yeah. We'd eventually see that. So we would get to the point where we stopped doing some of the, we tried to edit as much as we could in camera because then that means it was only one generation loss when we would do the sound mix afterwards. And I'd have like a Sega Genesis sitting there, Terminator 2, the little arcade game. You could go hit sound effects. Mm-hmm. So what we would do is we would have it on the second input of the TV and then go to like the gunshot sound. And then we'd just have it. We knew it was a button A, so yeah. we would hit button A and then time it with the gunshots. This is usually that's what we would do is we'd have like, you know, we invented these... levers basically, and then we'd put piles of dirt on them, and then you would pace them out so that way you, as you were running away from the guy shooting at you, these little plots of dirt would come up, so it looked like you were getting shot
man.
At. Oh yeah, it's hilarious!
Wow, you were all into it.
Oh yeah, we were.
And how old were you?
Started doing that around 15, 16.
Okay,
and then when I graduated around 17. I actually had enough money for my graduation to buy a video camera, a digital one of the mini DV cameras, uh-huh. and a FireWire capture card, one of the first ones there, and I started editing videos around that time using that setup on an old school Celeron processor. Spent hours.
But you loved it though. You were having fun, a good old time.
It was a lot of fun. So that was probably my first real introduction. I started like my first gig in the industry was setting up interpretation booths as an audio guy. Mm-hmm. So.
Like translator booths?
Translator booths, yep.
Yep.
It was for International Planning Incorporated. My dad's boss at Disney at the time, it was my dad's boss's wife who owned the company. Mm-hmm. And they got tired of renting all their gear from this one guy. And so my dad started asking me some questions. And then eventually my dad's boss asked my dad if I wanted to come work for them.
So your dad worked at Disney.
Yeah, he was in maintenance.
Maintenance. Okay.
Okay. So he worked over at Epcot and then Magic Kingdom and things like that. He was there like 13 years, I think.
Okay.
But he was in maintenance, and that was fun when we were both worked there together.
Yeah.
We'd get each other's emails and inter-office mail and stuff like that. It's pretty funny.
Is he a senior?
No, we're middle names.
Just the last name.
Just the last name. First and last names. Middle names are different.
Oh, okay.
So he's Dudley. I'm Jack.
Oh, that's
so,
okay.
Yeah.
So he was still Robert Permenter.
He's still Robert Permenter, yeah, and then I was still Robert Permenter. So, like I said, I would get phone calls from people like, "Hey, we got this maintenance something or other," and I'd be like, "You got the wrong Robert. You got to call the other one. Here's his number."
Nice. So
yeah.
Time at Disney.
Yeah. So International Planning Incorporated got my feet wet there, and then. Mark Wallace, who was our guitarist in our church band that we played together. He and I played together for probably 15 years in our church band. And he introduced me to Disney. He was like, "Dude, you should go try their TERP program," which was their freelancer program.
Okay.
I signed up, interviewed when I was 17. I turned 18 in the process before they hired me, so I didn't have to worry about any of the minor stuff or anything like that. And then I started working for them right off the bat when I was 18. That was in the summer. I did like 3 months of just hotel AV, and then eventually they wanted to hire more AV techs on, and I was able to get hired on full time. I think about 4 months after I got hired on. So
okay, so you were like 18, not even 18 and a half when you get a full time job at Disney.
When I got a full time job at Disney, yeah.
Okay.
And I've been doing the interpretation booth stuff for about 2 years.
Before that was at 16.
16 is when I started doing.
Oh
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm 36 now, so that's 20 years.
20 years
in and out of ballrooms for 20 years. So. So it's pretty. It's been cool. It's been a lot of fun. So yeah, I moved on to Disney. Did general AV there for probably about 9 months.
Yeah.
And the scheduler there was Daryl Anthony. He was great. I don't know if he's out there. I'm sure he's still around. But he was very integral for me trying to figure out what direction I wanted to go in. And I found out early on I didn't want a crew chief general. Hotel AV. That's not where I wanted to go. So he asked me that. He's like, "Where do you want to go with your career?" I was like, "Well, I'd rather." Good on the show team. At the time, they had, you had your hotel AV guys, and then we had our show team guys who did basically what we do now, which is go out and do general sessions and stuff.
Okay.
And then the hotel AV guys would then do all the breakouts.
The breakout rooms. Okay. And okay. So there was show team.
There was a show team, and then there was the hotel AV.
Hotel AV. Okay.
And they were completely different. The show team guys were a completely different department.
Now, did the show team guys stay specifically at one hotel, or did they go to multiple properties?
They went everywhere. We worked anytime there was something higher end than just your basic AV. That's when the show team guys would come in.
Now, did you do any of the like the anniversary of Disney and stuff like that?
Because
those are bigger events.
Those are bigger events. A lot of times, if it was like the Night of Joys and Grad Nights and stuff, that was usually the park guys would take care of those.
Okay,
but if there was video elements. We were the only real high-end video team on property, so then they would call, or they would use us to do anything. Like, I know we did a video wall one time, and I think actually Jerry Farnham came out.
Shout out to Jerry.
Yeah, I know, right? I think it was Jerry. It was a long time ago. I was only 18 at the time. I think it was Jerry. Now that I think about it, I think it was Jerry who did the video wall, and then we set up like a three-camera shoot for one of the grad nights on one of the stages, and so it was us doing the grad nights that during that stint.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what Daryl did, back to that, he asked me where I wanted to go, and I said, "Let's get me to the show team." So he just started throwing me on every breakout op that I could do. I got so sick of like running a 6-channel mixer, miking up people, making sure the computers work.
You doing audio?
Yeah, right. it got to the point, and I eventually asked him, I was like, "Dude, can I just do some setups?" And he goes, "No, I'm trying to get you on the show team, so you need to op as much as you can right now to get used to the pressure of being an operator." And then eventually he kept putting my name out to the upper management, and about 9 months after hiring on full time, that got onto the show team and started working with those guys there. At the time, it was Drew Hendricks, Bert Fox, Kevin McCormick. Mike Caputo. Who else? I'm forgetting some people, and I apologize if you guys are listening. But I did that for almost three and a half years.
Okay.
And then we just would do all, like I said, it was all the high end video stuff. So, and it was back in the days when we, Extron was the first one to come out with like a really nice high res switcher.
Yeah.
I forget the model number now, but we're still working with Barco 9200s and we would do a lot of what we would do is the special events for the internal events for Disney. So anytime like you had the CEOs come in, and or it would be like anniversary, like the 25 year, 30 year anniversaries, yes. and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we would be a part of and help put those on.
Okay, but in the ballroom.
In the ballroom. Yeah.
Yep.
And then we would do that. So I kind of cut my teeth there. Oh, and Sat Mary was out there at the time too. So
Bob, me Bob.
Yeah,
me
you
Bob. Bob.
Yeah, he was on the team with us, and they were the guys, because I was going to go to Full Sail and start that direction, and uh-huh. they were like, no, stay here. We'll teach you everything they'll teach you there, and you'll be able to grow and move on without having to take the loan burden on. So I was like, okay, I'll stick around here for a while, mm-hmm. and then I just started soaking up everything I could.
Yeah. And you're a good soaker too. You like information. Like
yeah.
you feed on information. And that's one thing I've noticed about you over the years. So you have people who are looking, who see this about you and were looking to feed into you and give you more because you could handle more. You were interested in it, mm-hmm. and you've met some of the industry leaders at the time,
mm-hmm. right, yeah.
Who were doing it professionally and,
right.
and making that mark in 21.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You're doing it, 22,
somewhere around in there. Yeah, I left. I left Disney in 04.
Okay,
right at the end of 03. Actually, 03, like New Year's Eve 03 was my last official date at Disney.
And what made that transition happen, or what led to that?
Yeah, so I started branching out while I was at Disney, starting to try to get some freelance work done. And McCormick was the one that had dropped my name to. LMG at the time, and at the time it was Bob Murdoch running the video department, mm-hmm. and so I did a couple. I did a gig with Bob. He was still teching at the time, and then I think he moved into a manager role like later on that year. This was I think 2003, and I did a gig for Tom Mockney. I don't know if you ever did Mockney shows.
Mm-mm.
Probably one of I hate to say it, but one of the worst guys to work with.
Oh.
He's tough, a tough character. But I guess I hit I knocked it out of the park for the show, and Murdoch called me up like a week later, and he's like, he left a voicemail, and I was like, oh crap, what'd I do? I'm thinking I messed something up, or mm-hmm. I did, the client's complaining, and so I called him back, and I was like, dude, what's going on? He's like, I'm getting ready to go into a meeting, I'll call you in a little bit, and I was like, is everything okay? Is the show okay? And he goes, oh yeah, the show went fine. I just want to talk to you about your future. And that's where he left it.
And this is Bob?
And this Murdoch. Is Murdoch, yeah.
Murdoch, yeah. Yep.
And I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. And we started talking. We negotiated a deal. And then I was already on the books for a gig for them in January, and I just eventually quit Disney and then just ended up doing that show as a full-timer.
Yeah.
And that first show is when I met Swinton, Michael.
Swinton.
It was funny. We were at the Boca Raton Resort, and we're both there at the same time. Like, we both pulled up, and we didn't know each other, but we were looking at each other like, you look like a tech. You're somebody.
Right.
And then we met in the ballroom, and he's like, dude.
and it's funny. You talk about that look, right? Mm-hmm. So my wife and I were on vacation in San Francisco mm-hmm. last week. And we're at the airport, and I kind of hear some, just random talk.
Sure, yeah.
And it was tech talk, talking about loading in an LED wall or something like that. Mm-hmm. I turn around, and I'm like, yep, tech.
Yeah,
It was just cool because you get that look, or you hear those buzzwords.
Sure,
and it's like, oh, tech.
You can key right into it and know what's going on.
Or you see a pelican.
Yeah.
Okay, he's going through the airport.
Yeah. Pelican with tons of stickers on it.
Tons of stickers.
Yeah, it's a dead giveaway. It's a technician in his workbox.
Yeah. So first, one of your first gigs with Swinton.
Swinton, yeah.
Down in Boca.
And he was just there for loading because they knew I was relatively new. So he helped me load everything in, and then he took off, and then I just ended up watching the show. And then
what were you doing on that row?
I was kind of like the one man band video guy.
Okay.
So I was, switching screens. There were no cameras on that gig. It was just a couple of projector stacks mm-hmm. and a small switching system. I don't even remember what it was at this point, but a couple graphics, a couple of playbacks,
right.
And all that. So, but and then was with LMG for a long time. I had mm-hmm. a good time there.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. I was able to take what I had learned at Disney because I had pretty much maxed out what Disney had to offer as far as learning.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't buying new gear. Everybody was kind of seeing the writing on the wall that, something was going to change in the mm-hmm. department, in the audiovisual department. And sure enough, after I left 2 years later, they PSAV came in and took over the whole
operation. Yeah.
Yeah. They got the department I used to work for no longer exists. Mm. So, because it's all PSAV now. But, so I was able to get out before all of that happened, and then start out at LMG. And then I was able to kind of like I said, I maxed out what I could learn out of Disney, and then I moved into LMG, and then, of course, they've got their set of gear that's, you know, above and beyond.
Beyond technology, Disney. Right?
Yeah, that
right?
That's the tagline. And then I was able to start learning their systems and learning, you know, the higher end gear because now that it's available.
Now, how was that process of like, it's like going from middle school and the high school, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Or whatever. Is that, that transition?
Yep.
Or to graduate school, whatever. But then it's just like starting off at the bottom and constantly learning and learning. And working with people who have a higher level of understanding, and then working to or learning to work with different dynamic of personalities and people who live all across the country and other freelancers. Just talk about some of that stuff.
I mean, it's I was always kind of shy. I've never been really. I don't consider myself a very outgoing person. So for me, it was just I would pretty much stay quiet until I got to know everybody, and then start to learn. Start to learn how to work with people, and there are very few people I actually bump heads with, and I try to keep it that way. I don't want to, don't want to be difficult to work with. Getting used to the travel. I met my wife in 2004. We started dating in 2004.
And you started with LMG in 2004.
Yeah, so that kind of all kind of played into, because I mean, being at the Disney group, the group of guys I worked with out at Disney, we were really close. And like you said, it's funny you say like it was like transitioning from middle school to high school. It's probably more like transitioning from high school to like college because we were goofballs. We were absolute goofballs on show site at Disney. It was hilarious. Good times there. But, you know, moving to LMG, there's definitely a maturation process that happened. And you still have fun, and of course. Yeah, it was not the silliness that we would
Disney. I mean, there's a higher level of client, not necessarily a higher level of clientele, but it seemed like the expectations were probably a lot higher, too, and you had to perform on a different level.
Yeah, you definitely did. As I think about it, we were, because you were, we were union out at Disney, so it was tougher to, it was tougher to get fired. You had to really, really screw up basically to get fired. Do something really dumb. Going to LMG, you definitely kind of had to, you obviously had to step up your game and then start to learn how to deal with the customer service aspect definitely more. Because you were more connected. Like there was a level of, at Disney, there was a level of separation between you and the client a lot of times. The managers would kind of be that go-between. For you, and with LMG, you were definitely more face to face with the producers and the end clients.
Now let's talk about that. That interaction with the producers, with the clients, with the higher end clients, and just having to act and carry yourself in a certain way. Like this show here, we're dealing with some billionaires.
Oh, that's true.
they're billionaires in the ballroom,
right?
And we have to dress a certain way.
Sure, yeah.
You have to act a certain way when you're in the ballroom and outside of the ballroom.
Right, yeah, because they're...
Right, and they're if you're older. A goofball...
Right, yeah.
And Disney, or just a goofball, not necessarily working any specific place, but just a goofball and not at that certain maturity level.
Right, yeah.
There is a transition that one has to take in order to advance their career.
Sure, oh yeah, absolutely.
Would you agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You have to almost, put away the childish things... for the time and understand that you bring a level of professionalism to the environment is really what it is. I mean, you could still be a goofball on site. It's just, you got to know when and where to do that. Have that responsibility to be able to say, hey, you know what? Let's, we can go have fun, during load in and everything. But, hey, clients are in the room or, they're right there at the bar. Let's, let's just keep it chill for a while. There's no need to get super rowdy or draw unnecessary attention to yourself, that's the way I kind of think of it, I guess. Exactly. You have to be mindful of all that because that's ultimately at the end of the day who's paying your checks.
Exactly,
that's who's signing the checks at the end of the day. And it's tough. I mean, there are certain times you think it's just. You could understand certain feelings with, this guy's a billionaire and, this is ridiculous. I can't believe we got to sit around here for the next 6 hours while this guy clicks through PowerPoint. But then you think about it, you go, well, the guy's just going to click through PowerPoint. You're sitting there waiting, watching a guy click through PowerPoint.
Right. I mean, that's part of the gig.
That's part of it.
That's part of the gig, yeah.
Somebody, I won't name names on this one, but somebody, we were doing a pharmaceutical show, and he's like, you know, anti-pharmaceutical. I can't believe I'm here sitting here supporting this and all that. And I went, well, think about it this way. You're Robin Hood. You're sitting back here doing what right now? Oh, you're on your laptop surfing the web. They're paying you how much to sit here and surf the web while this guy gets up there and clicks through PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just part of it. You're not supporting. You know, if you're feeling guilty about that, don't, because you're reaping the benefits of that corporation at that point in time.
Now this natural transition here. Mm-hmm. This person also has a choice. Right.
Right. Yeah.
You have a choice to say yes or no to a gig. You know, we're talking about your time at LMG. Mm-hmm. Now you're freelance. You know, you no longer work with LMG full time. We still do work with them, you know, on a freelance basis. But you have a choice. And if, say, you don't agree with the views of a certain company, then you choose not to work that person's show.
Right, exactly, you absolutely can.
How has that transition been for you as far as going from full-time to freelance?
It's been good so far. Not saying I'm not nervous about certain things, or if I end up with a slow month here and there, it doesn't make me pause for a minute and go, oh, yeah. I definitely have your moments of anxiety from time to time, but overall it's been a good transition. Like you said, now I have that ability to kind of say no. Whereas before, being full-time, you were kind of obligated to always be there and always be almost on call all the time. Mm-hmm. Although it didn't happen all that much. It does. It does. You know, there were times that they called me up and said, I need you to, you need to pack your bags. We need to fly you out to here to go get the show up and running. Or, you know, just had a show pop up. We've got to have you go down to Miami or something like that. So that would happen from time to time. And you really didn't have that option to say no. So moving to freelance, that's probably one of the biggest, I guess, changes in attitude, is because I can say no when I get into, say, a crappy show or something, or an undesirable situation on a show. It's like, well, I had the option to say no, and I said yes. So I'm here now. I got to take care of it, you know. So in a lot of ways, there's a little bit of that kind of pressure is off, you know, because you are kind of now making your own way in the industry. You're not relying on someone else, you know.
Or at the same time, you don't have the benefit of somebody else to help to steer your way. So, because if you're starting off young in the industry, you don't have your name, you don't have your mark, and you're unguided, you know, you don't have the benefit of learning from a large company and having the opportunity to touch all that equipment, you know. So there are benefits to having the backing of a large company. But in every person's life, there's a time for growth or change.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and for you, it felt like that change, it was time for that change or that adjustment.
Yeah, exactly.
And like you said, you know, we're still working with LNG. Great company, great gear. Can't go wrong there.
No, nope,
take care of you.
Yeah.
Do anything to make a show work well. But now on the transitioning to freelance side, finding clients or finding work.
Right.
You know, how has that been for you?
Easier than I thought. Like, a situation happened last year in October where I ended up miscommunication with a client. I wasn't on one of their shows, and I thought I was. And it was like, I forget how long, but it was a good chunk of October. And when I realized I wasn't on that show, I all of a sudden had 4 weeks open in October, which is usually a busy time of year for us. So then I just started, I got on Facebook, I started emailing everybody I knew that had contacts and stuff. And I saw this early on, so it was about 3 weeks out before that big gap hit up. I ended up working the entire month. I had like 22 days or something crazy in that month.
Right,
so
right.
It ended up, that was actually a really good learning lesson for me, because then it told me that, you know, if you start getting slow, all you got to do is just start, you know, basically throwing some bait out there, getting your hook in the water, and then, you know, just got to contact people and start asking around, hey, do you got anything? I'm not doing anything, you know.
Yeah.
What do you got going on? Let me see if I can help you out with something. Mm-hmm. So
that's one thing I've definitely learned about. I mean, I've been freelancing for 16 years now, and it's all about your network.
Right.
It's all about your network, your work ethic.
Right, yeah.
And your desire to I mean, it's all part of work ethic. You know, your desire to be there, your desire to be there for your client,
right.
your desire to be there for your fellow tech.
Yep.
And your desire to put forth a good brand on yourself and
sure.
make sure that you stand for something good. And so you had 3 weeks lost.
Right.
you planted a seed.
Right.
And because of the foundation and the good soil
right.
that
yeah.
you had,
yeah.
it was able to get watered and grow.
And grow.
You'd be able to get that money.
Yeah, be able to make bills that month.
Get that money tree going.
Yeah, right. It was, you know, that's one of the biggest things is just getting used to the idea of, you know, even if it gets slow, you know, just all you got to do is start reaching out and then, you know, you'll find something. There's enough work out there for everybody.
Now, how long have you been freelancing now?
I left April of last year, so a little over, about a year and a half.
Yeah. Have you, your slow times, what have you been doing? And those, have you been, you know, planning for them financially or just kind of?
A couple of them though, this year have been a surprise. The hurricane.
We did have a hurricane.
Surprise there. I lost a show in an already pretty lean month. August ended up being leaner than I wanted it to. But I still had some work. I just didn't have as much as I really would have liked to have had. You do trying to plan for those, you know, at the beginning of the year usually is your busiest, so you try to set some stuff aside, some money aside to help float you through when you get a lean month or two.
Yeah,
it happens. Same thing like with December's coming up. I really don't want to work the whole month of December, so I'm going to be as you know, invoices come in and stuff, I will be putting money aside to be able to make sure I can just float through the latter half of December into January, because you're going to get that little bit of a gap there in the invoice cycle. So you got to be able to cover yourself into the next month. Learning how to do that has been interesting.
But then once January rolls around.
Yeah, you're busy, so I'll get out, and it's a nonstop freight train till about April.
Right. And then, you know, there are some of those bigger shows that we tend to do that kind of roll us through the summer even a little bit. It's been fun.
And freelance too has given me some really good opportunities. I've been able to dabble now into doing some television work and engineering.
Tell us about some of that. How'd that transition happen?
My good friend Adam Feldetta's got his own company going now, and we were able to
shout out to Adam.
Yeah, buddy.
What's the name of his company?
AFPC.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was able to find a client down in Miami it was able to snag a new show. Well, it's a new old show. It's a Latin American version of Ridiculousness.
Nice.
And and they called it Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
So they contacted, actually it was Adam's friend, who's a DP, a director of photography, which suggested, because he had worked with these producers before on some of their commercial shoots and stuff like that, and he's like, no, you guys should try Adam, because he'll be able to give you a good deal and he'll give you a great service. And so they contacted Adam, and then he put the bid together and everything, and then we went and we had a month down in about 3 weeks, actually. It wasn't a full month, but we had 3 weeks down there shooting this show. We shot at the Latin American market version and the Brazilian version. There were two different sets of. So it was a week of load in, 1 week shooting the LATAM, and then the 1 week shooting Brazil.
Yeah.
And then we just hit it off. One of the key things, I think, we were able to, we got really friend, you know, the producers really, really like Adam and I. They really like enjoying us, having us on set, and we're able to work with them in really good ways. Like that first season of Ridiculous, they wanted to get a Samsung phone up on the LED screen. And they went to the scenic company first because it was all their gear, and they were like, oh, we're going to have to do a custom app. It's going to cost, it was tens of thousands of dollars to get this phone up on screen through the scenic company.
I just wanted to make notice that, there is a plane flying overhead.
Oh,
you know, because we are sitting outside.
Sorry. Yeah.
Enjoying the beautiful view of the mountains here in Carlsbad, California. So just let that pass over. But
yeah.
Talk about the Samsung phone.
So yeah, it was going to be tens and thousands of dollars from the scenic company. So they came to us, and they were like, "Well, is there anything you guys can do?" And I said, "Well, can you get me, give me Apple TV, Chromecast, an Anycast, a Miracast? If you guys can get me those pieces, I'll see if I can come up with something the next day or two." They ran a PA, ran out to Best Buy, grabbed all that stuff. By the afternoon, I had the phone up on screen.
Nice.
You know, they just spent maybe $800 worth of little doodads and some Wi-Fi routers, and we got it up on screen. Now, it wasn't perfectly reliable, but since we were live to tape, we could easily cut, get the phone to reconnect.
Yeah.
So it worked about 80% of the time, which was still pretty good considering, you know, we were going through a Chromecast, which using a beta version of the screen share and all this stuff. So it ended up working out. So I think with that, and then the way Adam and I are just, we're kind of goofballs anyways on set. The producers loved, you know, they literally come over and hang out with us because they just like being, you know, they like our personalities, and we try to do what we can to, you know, to just have a good time while we're there. So,
and I love what's going on here in my mind, you know, because I'm thinking about you as the engineer and, you know, going from your Disney days of being a goofball.
Right.
And then you go through your maturation process of being in, you know, some of your higher end situations and stuff like that. And then now you've kind of engineered a way to get yourself to being somewhat of a goofball in the right times.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the right situations. But then you're still having the opportunity to do something that you love and that you've been doing since you were 16.
Right. Yeah.
It's pretty damn cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
20 years.
Yeah. 20 years. It's crazy. It's crazy when you think about it. It's like, dang.
But it's all about that balance. It's about that understanding of, you know, keeping your life in your work, even though they're going to be somewhat overlapping, but keeping those priorities straight for your life and the things that kind of keep you moving forward.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And when I know one of those things that keep you moving forward is your daughter.
Oh yeah. Always. Yep. It's so funny. It's a funny story. Speaking of my daughter, my wife, they were at Disney the other day, and she texts me. She goes, "This is totally your kid." She leans over to me and says, "Oh, what did she say? I've got it on my phone. It was the audio and video aren't right. They're not in sync." I was like, okay, yeah, it is.
right.
She is.
They see those things that we expose them to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Know? Oh, I did a little fun little project. I did a little IR head tracker device. I built it myself. I was just having fun with it. And my daughter sat there the whole time watching me solder it all together. And I was telling her what it was doing and how it was working and all that stuff. So she sat there for a good like 3-4 hours watching me solder it up and play with it and tinker with it and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
So she's definitely got that kind of a mindset. So I already see that she's got kind of that kind of a mind that I've got, where I want to learn stuff. I want to actually, you know, see what it's about and then figure it out from there, and and see how to use it better and go from there. So
I definitely see that as well in my son. He and I have very deep intellectual conversations. He's nice. 8, mind you. He's 8.
Right.
But I have these conversations with him that, you know, I don't have with some adults. And it's really cool to when they get it.
Right.
You know, because they are a part of you and they get you. And you know, to bring it all full circle, it's really good to be able to have that opportunity to be there to impart that.
Oh yeah.
And have those conversations with them in their life. Overall, I wanted to thank you for joining us on the production channel.
Oh, thanks,
Robert.
Man. I appreciate it.
It's been a good time.
Yeah, man. Always good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of chatter on the on our headset in the ballroom.
Oh, yeah,
we do. There's a lot of opportunity to share some of that chatter with the audience. So, good times, man.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
It's been fun.
Peace.
All right.